There are very sober people who are talking about the possible death of the entire oceans, who are talking about the end of fish. And if that's not worth fighting for, what is worth fighting for?
This is Peak Moment. We are living at a peak of human innovation, information, wealth, and health. But we're also at a peak of population and consumption, with rising temperatures and declining resources fueled by cheap oil and gas. Peak Moment Television, bringing you examples of positive responses to energy decline and climate change through local community action.
Hi, welcome to Peak Moment. I'm Janaea Donaldson. This is part two of conversation with Derek Jensen, author and activist, author of books like Endgame and Deep Green Resistance. Derek, you've really taken a look at the destructiveness that our civilization is doing to the whole planet. I mean, to other people, to other cultures, to the whole natural world. And part of it, of course, is because we're swimming in it. I mean, so we can't imagine another way to live.
Well, and besides which, if we've been bought off, and we wouldn't have hot showers, or we wouldn't have internet access.
Or video cameras.
Or
clothes with lots and lots of color.
You probably
things
still have clothes with lots of color. It's just it would be bird feathers or and they had dyes of various sorts.
But there's a lot of things that looks, you know, orchestral music. Things that I can imagine are being willing to give up stuff that doesn't matter a lot to us, but this is comfortable, and literally we cannot imagine.
It's comfortable for a few of us.
That's
on a global scale.
Very good point.
I mean, is it something that's thrown out at me a lot? It's very clear to me, and to really anybody who's paying any attention, that civilization is killing the planet. It is not, and it can never be sustainable. And any way of life based on the use of non-renewable resources won't last. Any way of life based on the hyper-exploitation of renewable resources won't last. Any way of life that perceives others as resources to be exploited won't last. And, you know, whatever measure you want to take, you know, 90% of large fish in the oceans are gone.
So we're well on our way. We're well on our way to not lasting by exploiting
everything. And not just us not lasting, but
everybody else.
Everybody else.
Right.
I mean, that's one of the things that I find tremendously frustrating is that you see so many. What do all the so-called solutions to global warming have in common? What they all have in common, that are proposed by mainstream people, what they all have in common is they take industrial capitalism as that which must be saved at all costs, as civilization is that which must be saved at all costs, and the natural world is that which must conform to industrial civilization. And that is literally insane in terms of being out of touch with the physical world, because the physical world is the physical world. And you don't have any social system without a physical world.
You don't have any economy without
a
physical world.
It's the source of all life.
Yeah.
And one of the brilliant things this culture has done, which is what any abusive system does, is separate us from the source of life. Any abuser, domestic violence situation, one of the first things they do is they cut off the woman. The man will cut off the woman, which if we use a male-female standard, since we live in a patriarchy, the man will cut off the woman from her social contacts. He will attempt to convince her to normalize the behavior. He will attempt to... One of the reasons that so many women stay with abusive men, well, one of the reasons is because when they try to leave, they're 7 times more likely to be killed than when they stay. But another reason, I believe it's 7. Anyway, another reason that so often they stay is because they don't know how they're going to survive because they are dependent. And the dominant culture has done the same thing. That if your experience is that your food comes from a grocery store and your water comes from the tap, you will defend to the death the system that brings those to you.
Yes, yes.
If, on the other hand, your food comes from a land base and your water comes from a river, you will defend to the death the land base and the river because your life depends on it. So one of the things that's happened is we have on every level been separated from the real world. And that doesn't alter the fact that the real world is what supports everyone. And Anyway, so what all the solutions to global warming have in common is they take industrial capitalism or industrial civilization as that which must be preserved. And it's ridiculous. If you ask, I've done this. I asked a 7-year-old child, how would you stop global warming that's caused in great measure by the burning of oil and gas? And the 7-year-old kid said, stop burning oil and gas. If you ask a 35-year-old who works for a high-tech consulting firm how to stop global warming that's caused in great measure by the burning of oil and gas, they will give you an answer that helps the high-tech consulting firm. When people ask, how can we stop global warming, that's not what they're asking. What they're asking is, how can we stop global warming without actually stopping the burning of oil and gas? That's what they're really asking.
Or how do we change this culture without
changing,
you know, without risk to myself, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. And that's one of the problems, is that I've asked people at talks, are you afraid of the United States government? And are you afraid, do you change your behavior and do you change what you say about ecological destruction and about corporate control because of fear of reprisals by, about 90% say yes.
Mm-hmm. I believe that.
Which doesn't alter the fact that the world is being murdered. And one of the things that we need to recognize is the culture is not going to change on its own. There's not going to be a voluntary transformation.
That was one of the things that hit me. That is like, you're not going to get the corporations to turn around and do things to help the planet.
You can't even get universal health care.
Right.
You can't even get no-brainers, you know? I mean, the economy is collapsing and there's still increasing the military budget. It's just...
And they're still bailing them out.
The amount of money that they spend, I've done the math on this, and... I don't remember what the numbers are for, I think it's like they're spending like, I'm making the numbers up, but it's like $1 million per Afghan person that they're killing.
I've heard some astronomical thing like this. Yeah.
I think they're actually spending, not for the ones they kill, but I think they're spending like 10 times the GNP of Afghanistan per capita GNP, they're spending 10 times that much for the repression. And, I mean, that's just stupid, as well as immoral. It's just really stupid. I want you to just hand them the money and say, you know, be nice to us and we'll be nice to you, whatever. I mean, none of this makes any sense. And that's what I think about when I think about, when I read articles about the Arctic melting. Mm. What they are is about how wonderful this is because this is more... oil and gas they can exploit. This is more gold they can try to get or whatever.
Shipping lanes.
Right.
It's continuing the same,
which is not going to stop. Yeah. And what would we do if space aliens, had come down from outer space and they were systematically deforesting the planet and they were systematically changing the climate and they were putting dioxin in every mother's breast milk? And
of course we would fight that.
Of course we would fight that.
You see who the enemy is, and we would probably, you know, we would fight that to protect what?
Our lives,
right? We're looking at a web, I mean, incredibly deep web of interconnected organizations, structures, agencies, I mean, a culture of domination in which it's all the way from our thoughts to every physical form outside of us.
So many indigenous people have said to me that the first and most important thing that we need to do is to decolonize our hearts and minds. Mm. And part of that is, as we talked about last time, part of that has to do with perceiving the world as not consisting of resources, etc. But it's not sufficient to just change your heart, because that doesn't do a thing to stop the power structures, to change the power structures. It's like my friend Lier says, the role of an activist is not to navigate systems of oppressive power with as much integrity as possible. The role of an activist is to take down those systems of oppressive power. And so one can find in one's heart that the Nazis are evil, or that the apartheid South Africans are evil, or that capitalism is evil. But if all you do is change your own little heart, that doesn't do a damn thing to help.
It's not doing enough. That fits in with what you're saying about taking private showers. It's like saving water, saving anything, recycling.
But 90% of the water used by used in the industrial nations is used for agriculture and industry.
Mm.
So people aren't dying of thirst in Africa because of people taking showers. They're dying because the water is being stolen. And it's the same. Most of the countries that experience famines at that time are exporting food. The Great Irish Potato Famine, they were exporting grain to England. They're not dying of starvation. They're dying of colonialism.
Mm.
And this is happening. New land grabs are going on right now. Recently, China's taking land in Pakistan, and it comes with soldiers to keep the local people off. China and other Japan, some other countries, are doing land grabs in Africa, the United States, of course, doing land grabs. What was it? I don't remember which country it was recently, Somalia maybe, or Ethiopia, that was exporting lima beans and other foodstuffs to Europe at the same time
that the people
are starving.
Yes, yes.
And years ago, 15 years ago now, or 13 years ago, I even remember the Tupac Amaristas, a rebel group in Peru. And I asked him what they want for the people of Peru. And he said, we want to be able to grow and distribute our own food. We already know how to do that. We merely need to be allowed to do so. And that's the entire struggle right there. So back to the space aliens coming down is that, and to decolonizing, that one of the important things about decolonizing is the most important part, I think, is finding your loyalties. Are you loyal to, what is it you want to preserve? What do you want to protect? Do you want to protect industrial capitalism? Do you want to protect the natural world? Who is your allegiance to? It's like one of the things that I talk about quite often at talks is that as civic society collapses, if you want to know what happens when a patriarchal civic society collapses, look at the Democratic Republic of Congo. That as civic society collapses, there will be an increase, whether through peak oil, through resistance, through economic collapse, whatever, there will be an increase in rapes. That this is what happens when cultures are stressed, when communities are stressed, rates of rape often go up. And this is not to excuse the men who are doing it at all. I'm just saying it's what happens.
Okay.
And the time to prepare for that is now, and is before the collapse, before civic society collapses. And there's, whenever people talk about this, I always say that there's two different things we can do. And this is going to come back to the point of resistance, which is, my suggestion for women in this circumstance is the words of Andrea Dworkin, which is harden your hearts and learn to kill. And what I mean by that is the time to take a self-defense class is now. It's not when somebody's kicking your door down. What I think that men should do is we need to make our allegiance to the victims of male pattern violence absolute. And we need to transfer our allegiance now. And this comes back to the global warming thing, having to do with we need to make our allegiance to the natural world absolute, to the real physical world absolute. And as you know from Endgame, there are some things about Buddhism I don't much like. But one of the things I do like when it's correctly applied is the notion of attachment. And I can, but the problem is it becomes dogmatic in that they'll say we need to not be attached to the natural world or whatever. That's insane. But I like it in terms of I drive a car, but I'm not attached to the car. As opposed to I am attached to living in a world with frogs and living in a world with salmon and redwoods, there's a difference. And so one of the things is we can still drive a car. We can still do whatever because I didn't create, it's like an indigenous person said to me years ago, I was complaining, oh my God, I caused global warming because I drive a car. I said, look, you didn't create car culture. Take responsibility for what you do, but what you need to do is destroy car culture. That's taking the responsibility. Once again, what would we do? things, as soon as your allegiance really is to the real world, the real physical world, and not to industrial capitalism, things become a lot more clear. And one of the things that's really clear and really important is the necessity for organized resistance. And I mean this on every level. I mean this from the level of, I mean, I have no problem. We've all heard the story of in Denmark during World War II, when they put the stars on, the first person to put on a star was the king.
For the Jews.
Yeah.
The Jews had to have a star on themselves.
So other Danes would do it.
Mm.
And that's great, but that only worked because Denmark had been declared a model protectorate by Hitler, and there were different rules in place in Denmark than there were in Poland, for example. If a non-Jew put on a star in Poland, I'm sure it would have been like, great.
Off the concentration camp you go.
And so when I talk about this, I'm not glorifying violence, or I'm not glorifying nonviolence either. I'm saying let's do what works. And that's going to be circumstantial. You know, I know attorneys who do great work above ground.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can also look at men, the Movement for the Emancipation of the Niger Delta. They were entirely above ground. They tried to play by the government's rules, and Ken Sarawiwa and others were executed, murdered, at the behest of Shell, by the Nigerian government. And so now they've gone underground, and they have been able to reduce oil output in Nigeria by up to 40% through
wow.
sabotage and kidnappings. And there it's worked. And I guarantee they have less resources than any NGO here.
Mm-hmm.
And what we need to do is get really serious about, and we're talking about the real physical world, 120 to 150 to 200 species went extinct today. I want to say another thing too, which is one of the responses by a lot of people is to say, well, and that's the case, we need to make our own little lifeboats and protect those close to us. And I can understand the logic behind that on some level, but there's another level at which I find it really disturbing. And I've studied the resistance to Hitler, because if you're going to write about violent resistance, the first place to start really is resistance to Hitler, because it's like such a no-brainer. And one of my heroes is Henning von Treskow, who was on the Eastern Front, and he was involved in the resistance for many, many years, trying to stop Hitler. And when the Allies invaded France in 1944, started to liberate France, the members of the resistance knew that the war was effectively over. And they said, you know, some of them said, well, in that case, let's just let it go. And Henning von Treskow's response was, I don't know if I'll be able to say this without crying, was, the Nazis are killing 16,000 innocent civilians every day. And so every day sooner that we can bring down the Nazi regime is 16,000 innocent people. We must go ahead. And 200 species are going extinct every day. Every day sooner that we can bring it down is a day sooner that those species aren't going extinct. And there's that much left of the world for both humans and non-humans afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
It really mm-hmm. bugs me that sometimes mm-hmm. for calling for bringing down civilization, there are some people who say, well, that's really immoral because it's going to kill a lot of people. And my response is always, which people are you talking about? You're talking about hammerhead shark people? You're talking mm-hmm. about salmon people?
Mm-hmm.
Talking about polar bear people? And polar bears, if you ask polar bears if we should bring down civilization, they'd say, yeah.
Yeah, right now.
But okay, let's forget them. Let's just talk about humans. Do you think that subsistence farmers in India would be better off if the global mm-hmm. economy disappeared? Mm-hmm. Of course they would.
Mm-hmm.
I asked Anuradha Mittal, former executive director of Food First, if the people of India would be better off. And she just, if the global economy disappeared. And she just laughed and said, of course. She said, poor people the world over would be.
Mm-hmm.
There are former granaries of India that now export dog food and tulips to Europe because of the global economy. So people are starving to death so people in Europe can have dog food and tulips. And so would the people of the world who don't have access to electricity right now, would they care if the grid came down? Of course not.
Yeah.
And except insofar, I mean, you want to talk instant land reform in the third world, take down the grid in the industrialized nations, and no longer can the United States send arms in to... And there have been studies done that show that the increased resources valuable to industrialized nations lead, there's pretty much a one-to-one correspondence between increased resources available there and warfare within that country. For pretty obvious reasons.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so I don't think it's fair to say that taking down civilization is even anti-human. It's anti-exploitation. My definition of bringing down civilization is depriving the rich of their ability to steal from the poor and depriving the powerful of their ability to destroy the planet. And, I mean, we are in a crisis. There are very sober people who are talking about the possible death of the entire oceans, who are talking about the end of fish. And if that's not worth fighting for, what is worth fighting for? And I got interviewed by a pacifist several years ago, and it was a terrible, terrible interview. And one of the things he said in his write-up was, I get the feeling that Derek wants everybody to think like assassins. And this is not true at all. What I want is for people to think like members of a resistance. And that doesn't have to mean picking up guns. Only 2% of the IRA ever picked up weapons. 98%, only 2% of the U.S. military ever picks up weapons. I mean, most people do support work. And there are... I love this story. There's a member of the Irish Republican Brotherhood, which was before the IRA, was doing an action. He got shot. And he was able to make it away and then fell down in an alley. And just some regular guys on the way home from work saw him. And they picked him up, no questions asked, and took him to a doctor who then healed him and or fixed his wounds or set his wounds, whatever. And every one of those people was a part of the resistance. They didn't all have to participate, and they were all taking risks. The doctor would have died too. So it's absolutely untrue to say I want everybody to think like an assassin. I want for us to think like serious members of resistance, and I want for us to start thinking about effectiveness. The people who come after, human and non-human, are not going to care about, I think doing, you know, being the change you wish to see, I think is important on some levels in terms of, I think it's vital that we, it is crucial to who I am that I not be misogynist. Excuse me, that is part of the change I wish to see. But that's not sufficient. And the people who come after are not going to care about our emotional state. And they're not going to care about whether we felt really good for fighting the good fight. And they're not going to care how hard we tried. They're not going to care if we, you know, made really groovy artistic pieces of giant footprints. They're not going to care about whether we wrote really big books. They're not going to care about any of that. What they're going to care about is whether they can breathe the air and drink the water. What they're going to care about is whether the land can support them. That is the only measure by which we will be judged by those who come after, is the health of the land base. They're not going to care about whether we did great TV programs. I mean, these are not ends.
That's right.
These are means.
That's right.
And so I think we need to really start thinking in terms of effectiveness. I mean, those in power think in terms of effectiveness all the time. I mean, oftentimes they're really ineffective. But we need to start thinking about what is it. We don't do a very good job at either coming up with goals or with strategic thinking. We need to think, what is it that we want? I don't think most environmentalists even know what we want, frankly. And what I want is I want to live in a world that has more wild salmon every year than the year before, and a world with more migratory songbirds every year than the year before. I've lived here for 10 years. I've seen a collapse just in this time, another collapse of migratory songbirds. Frogs. 3 years ago where I live, frogs were so loud out at night. No, 5 years. Five years ago, they were so loud at night that I could not have a human conversation outside during the spring. And now, almost none. The last couple years, I've started to notice banana slugs even are disappearing. I've heard from friends elsewhere that banana slugs, actually elsewhere in the county even, both banana slugs and frogs are doing okay. But I don't know. I mean, so that was what has to do with what I was saying about loyalty. Oh, God, I got to tell you this. This guy, Kevin Kelly.
We're about 3 minutes over, but keep going.
Okay, this guy, Kevin Kelly, wrote this wretched book called What Technology Wants. Which he was one of the founders of Wired.
Okay.
And it's basically a toxic mimic of animism that he starts off with technology as a technology. What does it want as a metaphor? And he ends up actually, what does technology want? He talks about technology as a living being. And what does it want? Yeah, it wants to kill us, frankly. But anyway, he interviewed me for that book. And the interview was one of the most surreal things ever because he said, so what do you want? You're clear that you want civilization to crash. What do you want after civilization?
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, I mean, in terms of, I don't need to talk about what I want human communities to look like because we know what they look like. They look like traditional indigenous peoples. But that wasn't what he was asking. So what do you want in the world? I said, well, I want salmon. So what else? I said, well, lampreys, migratory songbirds. What else? Redwoods. What else? Clean water. Clean air? He said, what else? Like, frogs? What else? And I said, well, I don't know what you're asking. He said, well, what about cardboard? That was my response. I said, cardboard? Yeah, he said, don't you want cardboard? not particularly. He said, well, what about electricity? I said, well, the manufacture, the production of the generation of electricity, the industrial generation of electricity is not sustainable. Well, it doesn't really matter what I want on that level. There's lots of little girls who want pink ponies for Christmas and it doesn't mean they get them. And you can't have industrially generated electricity on a planet. It's just impossible.
It's not sustainable.
It's not sustainable.
Derek, thank you.
Oh, thank you.
You're watching Peak Moment, locally reliant living for challenging times. I'm with Derek Jensen, the author and activist. Join us next time.